Morning, everybody. I will call the report of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, August 7, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, and good morning. Fairly packed agenda in terms of number of items, but I don't see anything that I'm expecting to take a particularly long time. However, I do have an 11:30 in Ames that I have to be at, so at 11 o'clock, regardless of where we are, I will turn the gavel over to Marty Chitty, and Marty, you and Loris will handle it from there. So let's jump right in and get going. First item, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to a report from our insurance partner, Nat Tedesco, and their annual insurance presentation.
Good morning.
Morning, everybody.
Hi there.
Morning, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be on the agenda this morning and to provide an overview of your insurance. Andrew Rickliffe is on my right. Susan Hosher, who many of you know, is in the audience. And I know Todd Lundvall is here today as well and has had some involvement in this as well. We've enjoyed working with Todd. I want to take an opportunity just to review several things today related to your insurance renewal. But before I do that, I want to tell you that and just remind you that we renewed with the Iowa Community Assurance Pool, what will be commonly referred to as ICAP, and the Iowa Workers' Compensation Association for the work comp insurance. The county's been with both of those organizations for about 15 years. It's been a good fit for this county, and I would tell you that ICAP insures about 800 municipalities across the state. 73 of the 99 counties across the state are insured with ICAP. And so we continue to believe it's a good fit for Story County, as is the IMWCA for work comp. And we can certainly talk a little bit later if you have questions about the benefits of ICAP or even separate from this meeting today. Our job, we believe, is to not only make sure you're properly covered, you've got competitive premiums, but we also want to take some time each year to look at trends and particularly claims trends, because that's the place where we think we can have the most impact in terms of trying to detour some of that and certainly working with your staff here as well. And so today we want to just walk through 8 or 10 slides to show you some claim activity. I think you've got this in your packet today, and I've got some extra copies for the audience if anybody would like a colored copy and would like to follow along with us. But we'll just launch right in and we'll go to the first slide. Thought we'd just take a quick look at work comp claims first, and that's, you know, really where the activity is for this county. There isn't a lot of non-work comp claims on a daily, weekly, annual basis here, but this is work comp claims by frequency. This is a 5-year look back, going back to 2013 through the most current year, and you can see that we've broken these down by the most common types of claims: eye injuries, bites, slips and falls. Overexertion, which you can see is the purple, you may not be able to see that very well up there, but hopefully in your packet, about 17% is overexertion. That's lifting, stressed in the form of a lift. Cuts, about 11%. And then miscellaneous comprises the largest portion of that, which is about 44%. And so hold your question on what that really means, and I'll show you in the future slides. So then we broke it down by work comp claims by dollar amount. So frequency is the amount of claims, dollar amount is how much is paid out. And again, you can see that in a couple of these categories, like eye claims, it's not a big dollar amount. It's about $4,800 over the past 5 years. Bite, which I think is probably related to the animal control facility, was just under $500. Slip and fall, on the other hand, which is the green portion up there, is about $172,000. And I'll break that down just a little bit further. Overexertion, $13,000. Cuts, about $3,500. And then here comes this miscellaneous category again, which is where frequency and the dollar amounts are, at $120,000. So, Irene, your chair, I'd be asking, okay, what makes up that miscellaneous category? What's in that area that is not a bite, a cut, a burn, whatever the case may be? And so here's what makes up that miscellaneous area. 13% are outdoor rashes, commonly, I think, with some of the conservation staff and perhaps a few other employees. 2% are burned. 19% exposure to bodily fluids, I think you might be able to predict where some of that occurs, probably related to the jail. 13% training exercises, police activities. You've got 8% that are not at fault accidents. And you've got a fairly high category of frequency of bump, scrapes, tweets. These are cuts, bruises, scrapes, common to conservation, roads, whatever the case may be. People who are employees who are doing work on a daily basis that might result in this. And then there's 8% others. So then again, you flip the page, or we'll go to the next page, and here is those miscellaneous claims broken down by dollar amounts. And again, some of these categories are not large dollar amounts. Outdoor rashes, 1,100, burns, 195. Exposure to bodily fluids, about $3,500. Training exercises, on the other hand, is a large dollar amount. It's about $95,000. And I went back this morning, and I'm sure Alyssa can speak to this too. There's about three claims that made up that $95,000 over the past 5 years. Two of those are closed. One is still open. And we're certainly hoping that will close at some point. You'll see the reserve a little bit later on that. But then you may recall from the prior slide, there was about 28% in what we call kind of that bump, scrape, cut. But if you look at this chart, and it's the green box, it's only $8,300. So while you may have more frequency in a certain category, that doesn't always translate to a large dollar amount of payout. And that's a tribute really to Alyssa and the staff here for getting those claims treated, getting that employee back to work, and not missing time. So it's not a concern for us. It's not a trend that we'd be concerned about as you look at that chart. And then 16,000 in other categories. Next one, here's total number of work comp claims. And you'll see that on average, this county incurs about 18 to 20 claims a year. That's not a surprise for a county that has this number of employees, or any municipality for that matter. We had the peak back in 13-14 of 25, and then a dip to 20, and it's averaged about 18 to 20 over the past 5 years. Last year was 21 claims, so not a concern if those numbers were 35 or 40 or 50 claims a year. I think we'd be concerned about that frequency and that total number of claims. Next slide, here's a work comp claims history by dollar amount, and even though there was a large number of claims back in 13-14, it didn't pay out a lot during those years, about 29,000. That's the far left graph. We had a pretty high payout in 14-15, about $126,000. We dipped back down to 15-16, spiked a little bit in 16-17, and then year-to-date, or I guess through the last policy period, we paid out about 51,000. There are about five claims that have open reserves. One is predominantly the large portion of that. I think it's about $46,000 on what you see in the red there, which is the outstanding claims of $66,000. Again, those are reserves that are sitting there waiting for that to be closed. And I think some of those will get closed fairly quickly. Talk a lot about your experience mod, and this is something we're always happy to talk about. If you go back 10 years ago, I think we were talking about this in Safety Committee recently. If you go back 10 years ago, this mod was higher. I think it reached 8.6 or 8.9 at one time, which is still a good mod. And really, once I kind of made the commitment to put in place a safety committee and do some other things, that mod started to drop. And so you see it was 0.78 in 13-14, dropped down to 0.62, dropped all the way down to 0.59, and that was the lowest mod in the state of any county or city at that time. I know we did the research at the time. It spiked back a little bit because payroll is a function of your mod calculation. We won't walk through that today, but the county moved the community life payroll off your payroll books, if you will, and so it spiked up a little bit, not because of claims, but just because you lost that payroll in the denominator, and it spiked up to 6.4 and then 6.7, and we had a little bit of claims activity back in 16-17, which drove a mod increase this year. 7.4 is still a very, very good mod in the state of Iowa. It's still being in the top five counties. We check this every year. You're still getting a good discount on your mod premium, as you'll see here in a minute. And I think it's something this county should be very proud of. We didn't project the mod going forward, but I think if we maintain claims where they're at, I think we'll see a little bit of a decrease next year in that mod. And again, that trend is really, really good. Here's just a quick coverage snapshot. Didn't think we'd go
Steve, before we get to that, sure. Questions on claims?
None.
Good. Okay.
A quick coverage snapshot. We didn't think we'd go through a lot of detail. We do this with staff. But you see, you've got about $64 million of property that we insure through ICAP. And just two points I wanted to make here. We did conduct a review of all the buildings, all Story County buildings, back in 16. That was a process that ICAP offered up, and we took them up on that. We adjusted building values on about 11 buildings. That's all been incorporated. It resulted in very little premium increase, but the about $51 million in buildings does reflect that, and I think that's a good process. We've also have scheduled an IT review. It's good to look at your computers, hardware, that type of thing every 4 to 5 years, 6 years, and I think that's been scheduled sometime later this year with ICAP. That's a service they provide in addition to the building. So that $2 million figure could change. But $64 million of coverage is included. Last slide I'll touch on, and I'll turn to Andrew. This is a look back on your premium summary. Look back to 16, 17, 17, 18, and then this year's renewal. If you look at that top number, that's your non-work comp. Your ICAP premium actually decreased about $2,000 this past year. And so we were pleased to see ICAP offer what we consider to be a flat renewal. And that says a lot about this county and a lot about your claims history. You don't have a lot of non-work comp claims. And so they were happy to offer a flat renewal. I think, again, they've been very fair to this county. Your work comp premium did increase about $18,000, and that's due to your mod increasing. And so when your mod increases, you see a little more premium. But again, IMWCA continues to be a great place for this county to be insured because your gross premium, if you look at the footnote at the bottom of that page, your gross premium is $456,000. And then it gets offset through a number of discounts by almost $300,000. Your mod offsets it by 26% or $118,000. You get what's called a longevity, large premium discount, loss experience credit, and that offsets it another $141,000. And then you get what's called a good experience bonus, which is another 20% or $39,000. These are not credits that we would normally see with a standard market. IMWCA is sending a message to you and other counties. They want to ensure this county is a very, very fair renewal. And we were pleased to see it. Your total premium is only up 4%, but if you compare it back to 16-17, it was a 5% reduction. So it's a good renewal from our perspective. And that's a quick look at your premium summary.
Questions about the renewal rate before we dig into where we go in the future, maybe with some of our deductibles?
No, because I think my questions are actually the next slide.
Perfect.
So you've got a good loss history. You've had good renewals with ICAP and IWCA. But we did take a look at how could you perhaps, given that history, how could you perhaps save some premium?
Well, this is a question we asked you last time you were here to review this and take a look at do we have our deductibles. I tell you, before we go, I just want to make one point on especially our work comp side of things. Now that we have a safety director in, Todd has reviewed all of this information in detail, and I think it's a reasonable goal and expectation that we're going to have, that we're going to start to see, especially with the training kind of things that happen, that maybe putting an extra safety component in can help us with, that we could see some positive trend lines going forward here.
We could be more pleased to see the county's investment in a risk manager. We enjoyed working with Todd, and I know there's a lot more we can do together, and I agree that trend will just continue to be positive.
So now that we brought up the risk manager, the new position, I did have a question. I thought maybe we had time at the end, but I'll ask it now. Is there ever experience shown that because somebody has a risk manager paying attention to all of this, that we actually open ourselves up to greater liability about the claims that we do have left because we should have foreseen something?
I don't know that we can speak to any.
Hard for me to get to more. So what I'm hearing you say is by us doing more, by us stepping up and doing the right thing and putting an extra program in place, that somehow we've increased our liability when we didn't have that in the past. That's tough for me.
Well, it's tough for me too, but I'm asking. I mean, I support our program. I just want to,
Come on up if you want to address
downside, on the seeing consequence.
And so we went through something similar, Loris, when we created a human resource department. As you know, when I joined the Board of Supervisors, there was no human resources department. And going down that road, I started to say this back when we talked about the spike in 13-14. Some of the spike in claims in 13-14 was because we were doing a better job reporting everything rather than some things being missed going through. And it's why we saw the spike in reports without a spike, in fact, a decrease in overall payment at the end. I would expect that we're going to see a very, very similar thing with the creation and addition of Safety Cotton.
Yeah, so in regards to the amount of risk we're taking isn't going to change, but we're going to become aware of those risks that we are taking. So it's just going to become awareness improvement. And with that being said, generally when a risk manager and safety programs get implemented in any operation, there is a spike. It increases. The reporting increases.
Right.
And that's simply because people aren't even aware of the exposures and stuff they're currently having. So, yeah, I expect the number to go up, but not because of any work that we're doing differently or anything that's been added. It's just it's an awareness of it.
And important to underscore, the number of reports or possible incidents going up, not necessarily the dollar amount that's being expended on those, because I'll flip it and say the other way. You're going to put a fresh set of eyes with a safety perspective on any training exercise that we're going to go through before we go through it. And when we see that that's our largest dot in terms of payout, that's our largest dollar amount for the work comp claims,
yep,
that's one of those that we should be able to walk in. It doesn't mean that there's no risk. It means we ought to walk into it with our eyes wide open of where the risks are and try to mitigate those.
Exactly. It's just what this title is. Completely risk management is what it is.
Yep.
And I've already addressed some of the training issues we've had. Went in and talked to the sheriff's office about some of that stuff and asked them. And it was pretty straightforward after talking to them. A few simple things we could have done differently to help reduce the risks that we have. So,
sure.
Yeah.
And then, thanks, Todd. And so now before we move on to our deductible alternatives, Loris, I believe you and Marty both know that we do this, but we have an opportunity to sit down over in the NAP Tedesco offices and do a little more detailed personal information dive at all this. Todd's included in those conversations, as is County Attorney Jessica Reynolds and Alyssa Wignall. And so there were great staff-level conversations coming out of that talk about how we move forward and try to really address those.
Okay.
This is intended just to make sure that we as a board and the public get the information that's appropriate for the public.
Correct. Okay, thank you. Thanks for letting me ask the question.
No, good question. Okay, with that, we'll turn to what we'd like to show you some deductible alternatives. I'm going to Andrew Rickless.
And again, as Rick pointed out earlier, we last year during this meeting wanted to kind of lay out some deductible options and kind of show you what we have today and then what's available and then the cost savings. So the slide we have up there right now, this is just the current ICAP program. Midterm review, we did a full deductible options on work comp and the IMWCA. It made zero sense to go to a larger deductible on the work comp. I mean, the numbers didn't, the savings was so small and the out-of-pocket costs were so much higher, we just scratched that pretty quickly. And we laid it out to some of the staff members here. Again, so we're not providing that today. Again, that's just because it's a waste of paper and time. So this is ICAP. So currently you have a $10,000 deductible on the property, liability, law enforcement liability, and public officials. So that's that first column there. It shows your limits and it shows your deductible. The auto and excess liability has no deductible. So we gave no options there because, again, it's currently at zero. So there's no options available. We quote a $25,000 deductible and a $50,000 deductible with ICAP. You can kind of see the premium savings there. Again, the next slide will kind of, so now you're probably asking, well, what's the out-of-pocket costs with the larger deductible? The next page on the top part, if you had a $25,000 deductible, the out-of-pocket costs over a five-year period would have been $28,000. Over that same five-year period for liability would have been $19,000. And then law enforcement, you had no claims, so it would no out-of-pocket costs additional. And then the column below that, again, with a $50,000 deductible on the property, it would have been an additional $53,000 out-of-pocket, roughly $10,000 a year, if you over a five-year period. Liability was $44,000 additional cost, and then again, law enforcement was zero additional cost. So again, I apologize for the two different slides here. We couldn't fit on one, but again, you can kind of go back and forth between those two slides to see the cost savings, and then again, the out-of-pocket cost with that additional deduction.
Yeah, so let's just do property real quick.
Yep.
Right? So property, if we were to go from a $10,000 deductible to a $50,000 deductible, that would save us roughly $25,000 a year in premiums. And if you look at the last 5 years, in order to save that $25,000 a year, it would have cost us an additional $53,000, meaning substantial savings.
Right.
You're assuming a little more risk, but you can offset it with premium savings. I think that was a fairly straightforward. You could go with a 25 or 50, but it probably makes sense to look at 50.
With property, we'd almost have to endure some catastrophic event, and considering our property is spread throughout the county, I mean, even though we've got substantial of it in Nevada, we still are looking at multiple locations.
Yep, and how deductibles work, it's a per occurrence basis. So meaning large tornado hits, that's an occurrence. So if it hits multiple buildings, you're only paying the $50,000 one time. Now, again, multiple tornadoes, that's different over a different time period. But, again, your worst-case scenario to me is a big tornado comes through and hits multiple buildings in Nevada. That's one deductible on the property. And that's kind of a good lead-in to the – so that property is very simple from an occurrence deductible standpoint. When you get into liability, the occurrence definition is very vague. And I say that meaning – It just depends. So property, storm, whatever, it's easy. That's one occurrence. Liability, it's really defined by the courts what an occurrence could be. You go, again, real quick, World Trade Center. There is still arguments today, is it one or two occurrences? Is it one or two? That's the argument in the courts and insurance. We've been fighting over that for years. Liability-wise, is something catastrophic were to happen, unless you really know, I can't tell you if that's going to be one occurrence or multiple occurrences. If something were to happen in multiple buildings or something were to happen where you're liable for, and that's, you know, back to our kind of our recommendations here, I just want to make sure you guys think about that from a liability standpoint. It's very hard to define an occurrence in a liability standpoint unless you know what the claim is and what happens.
If there's limit, there's minimal savings.
Very limited premium savings. $2,000 to go to a 25 and $5,000 to go to 50. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
And that, again, down to the law enforcement liability, there's a little more savings there. Again, there's about $10,000 in savings in law enforcement liability. But again, that occurrence, the occurrence definition is just different. I just don't want to have something come up where all of a sudden we've got 15 occurrences. When you think it's one, but the insurance company said, no, it's 15 different occurrences, 15 different acts here, and then you got to pay $50,000 15 times. And that could eat, and again, it could happen. I don't think of the scenario right now. Well, I'll give you the example in our review. We had one where a lawn care company came through and mixed the wrong chemicals, and it killed 80 lawns. Okay, 80 different lawns were killed because they put the wrong chemicals on. Insurance company said, that's 80 different occurrences. 80 different times they put that, and then so you had arguments saying, well, no, it was one occurrence. They mixed it one time wrong. Well, no, they're saying so I just don't want that to happen here from a liability standpoint. So,
and though you've not had claims in the law enforcement liability, there have been claims around the state in that area. So I think somewhat reluctant to recommend a higher deductible there. You could look at a 25 if you wanted to. But, again, the premium savings is only $5,000. To go to a 50, you may be assuming a little more risk than you care to. Again, property's clear cut. General liability, law enforcement, we're recommending keep it where it is. We can always revisit it next year.
And again, I just want you to understand how the deductibles work, because it's a little different. Property, I think, property to me is cut and dry. It's pretty easy to think about. You can picture it in your head. It's easy. Yep. Everything else is a little bit different how it's set up.
Questions or comments? So we can't take action on this today. My suggestion would be that we put consideration of moving property to a $50,000 deductible on an upcoming agenda for us to really discuss that. I look down, unless you guys can make a strong case for why we would want to change anything other than property, or even consider changing anything other than property, I would struggle with that. Your thoughts?
It's very plain. You see the history that leads you to the conclusions you recommended. I don't disagree. I vetted it with my insurance agent. Thinks it's a wonderful choice, and she concurs, so I would have to say I would be have.
I chuckle because he shares morning coffee with
you. That's right. Yeah.
Bed at night.
Well, if I have an insurance question, I know how to fix this. It's very. I appreciate the clarity. I think anybody watching, anybody reading it, would be able to look over our shoulders and probably come to the same conclusion. I don't disagree with what you're suggesting that we do and the rationalization why.
Outstanding. Okay, so Deb, Alyssa, I'll ask that we get a future agenda item consideration taking our property deductible to $50,000. Okay?
And I just want to make a comment to our law enforcement people. Thank you. I mean, zero claims in 5 years is just the present environment is pretty specifically great. So, congratulations.
Great. Deb, phenomenal job. So, any other questions? Perhaps that's it.
No questions, Lars?
No.
So, how long is it? Go ahead.
I was in Marshalltown yesterday talking to a county supervisor with our emergency manager for most of the morning, and they're experiencing something I hope we never see here in Story County. And he was talking about how his insurance provider their NAPSDESCO was virtually the street across from the courthouse, and they were experiencing catastrophic loss too in regards to what the tornado did to the courthouse, did to this business. And they had response within a half hour of the storm subsiding, and had their insurance agent on site making recommendations. One of the things that they did with the devastation that they had a structure on top of the roof was pulled off, which opened a 2-inch water main, which cascaded a lot of water throughout the building. Subsequently, the insurance provider, their Steve Goodhue, contacted a national organization to come do a sustainment of the building in regards to both the structure, the paper involved, and the electronics and whatnot. But one of the follow-ups that the supervisor said that then they got some acrimony from some of the local vendors that would like to have the opportunity to bid that. Can you, I mean, is that, if we have, with our policy, if we should experience Marshall County event, what are we going to expect from you in regards to that same scenario?
Disasters are becoming a little more prevalent around the country, and so it is bringing about more discussion by insurance agencies and their providers. In this case, with ICAP, you have what's called a benefit agreement. A little different structure than most standard carriers, but it still provides the same benefits. And you've got extra expense that may pay for records preservation, water damage cleanup, whatever the case may be. You've also got loss of rents and earnings loss if by chance you'd lose the opportunity to continue to do something during that time frame. You got valuable papers and protection, that sort of thing. I went through it this morning because I anticipated this might be a question given what's happening around the state. And you've got about $1 million of benefit-type coverages in the event of a disaster. And so our job would be to come in, quickly deploy what we needed to do to protect whatever records or equipment or people or whatever you had. We had two clients impacted by the Marshalltown disaster. We quickly rally just as we would here to protect your...
Absolutely. I take from that story, Marty, as much as anything, is clearly Marshall County has a really strong relationship with their insurance agent who rapidly did what needed to be done. I believe Story County has exactly that. Steve, I was going to ask you, how long has Story County now had a relationship with NAPSDESCO? Any guess off the top of your head?
I'm going to look to Susan Oscar on that question.
Dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's been easily 25 years.
NAPSDESCO, yeah. And Susan's been with us 25 years, and so it's been 25 plus years, and we very much
in a great way, and we appreciate it.
And let me say in closing, we appreciate the investment the county has made, not just in the safety committee, but safety days and a risk manager, and the time that we spend analyzing claims and risk. And so we very much appreciate the investment that you as supervisors have made and appreciate the relationship as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Consideration of minutes from July 31st.
Move as presented.
Okay.
Motion and second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed.
Move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims.
As listed.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda.
Move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Public hearing items. We do have one today. Discussion consideration of Ordinance 274. renaming a portion of Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Highway. Jared, it's pretty straightforward. Ames annexed it. They want to call it what they want to call it so it matches up with the rest of Ames. Done? What else do you need to tell us?
Not that much more, really.
Okay,
yeah, well, we got to go to the public hearing.
I'd like to set it up for me.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's Ordinance 274. Again, it's renaming of Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way. The board is focusing on the portion of East Lincoln Way that's in Section 9, Grant Township. This is kind of the overall area. I can see it on my screen. This is the East Industrial area that was recently annexed from the I-35 freeway to 590th Avenue, which is the common incorporated boundary between Ames and the city of Nevada. This is a resource map from the city of Ames, and it shows you, this is a red line that shows you the new corporate limits, the East Industrial area that was annexed, and the yellow represents the name changes that the city has been working on. It's starting from 590th Avenue. They've used names of famous scientists, so that's what you see. Potter Avenue, which is inside the incorporated area of Ames, would be 590th in the unincorporated area. And moving to the west, 580th. North of East Lincoln Way is going to be Teller Avenue. To the south is South Teller Avenue, which is right in here. And then to the north and south of the corporate limits of Ames, it will still be 580th. Avenue, and then to the west here, east of I-35, 566th Avenue will remain for the unincorporated portion, but the incorporated area that was annexed will be Fleming Avenue. So this is the map that we use for the notices that we sent out to all property owners within a quarter of a mile, and primarily what the focus for the board this morning is that area that's west of 590th Avenue, which Ames is calling Potter Avenue, a quarter mile stretch. We've got three parcels on the south side of the road. Here's an aerial from 2017. Two of those parcels have dwellings. They're about an acre in size, and then we've got a 35-acre agricultural parcel. Background, as Rick mentioned, the City Council approved through their process Ordinance 4360, June 19 of this year, renaming Lincoln Highway from I-35 all the way out to 590th, which is now Potter Avenue. This is probably more information than what's before us, but we thought you might have some questions about maintenance. And a lot of this is based on the 28E agreement. I want to thank Emily for working with the Ames staff, the county staff, engineer, our 911 coordinator, and collecting a lot of this information in this presentation today. But the city of Ames will plow the snow inside that quarter mile stretch that we're talking about. And Story County, will be maintained by Story County, and the north half will be maintained by the city of Ames. So the south half in that quarter mile stretch will be maintained by Story County. Ames will plow 580th Avenue along Teller north of U.S. Highway 30 to 13th Street, and then west on 13th Street to 570th Avenue. Ames will be responsible for maintenance within the incorporated portions, and then Story County will maintain those areas that are outside of the area that they annex. When you get to 566th Avenue or Fletcher Avenue, from the intersection of East Lincoln Way to the Cornerstone Church, Story County will plow and blade because Ames does not have that equipment, and then Ames will be responsible for the maintenance inside the annexed area, and then Story County will maintain the area that's in the county. Emergency service providers, Story County Medical for ambulance, Nevada Fire Department fire, the Story County Sheriff. We did communicate with a lot of folks on this, including the engineer, emergency management coordinator, 911 coordinator, obtained a lot of information from the engineering office about maintenance, road signage, worked with the 911 coordinator with regard to, you know, whether or not the roads should be, the name should be changed. And it's determined that in the unincorporated area, the name should stay the same as it currently is. We communicated with the Sheriff's Office, Nevada Fire, Story County Medical to communicate what's being proposed here. We sent notices, as I mentioned, July 27. We also sent specific letters to the three property owners that are on that south side of that quarter mile stretch. Their addresses will stay the same, but the road name will change from Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way. We also did the publication requirements in the three papers set out by the board on August 2. Board Supervisors set Resolution 19-3, setting the hearing for today. We went out to look at the signage. This is what's there. The city of Ames has already made the changes. We're working from the east to the west. This is East Lincoln Way and Potter. We're at this intersection here. Looking to the west, these are the two residences on that south side. This is the east residence, and that's the west residence. Teller Avenue at 580th. That's looking to the south. And then far west, again, 566th Avenue. Through this process, we learned that there was a property owner who's in the unincorporated area of that road that was concerned, wanted to make sure that the road actually had that 566th Avenue designation, so that stayed in addition to the new signs that were put up. Code of Iowa 32.044A-E talks about our process. We have to have three hearings. This is the first hearing. The next two are scheduled for the 14th and the 28th of August. There's language in there about making changes for historical or local significance. Again, it was determined that it's important to have the same stretch of the road with the same name for logistics, communication, for public safety. There is no fees associated with this request. Again, the properties in the unincorporated area, they'll still have their 911 signs. Only the name change is being requested. You know, with this area is going to grow. We know it's going to grow with the East Industrial Area. And so it's important to have consistency in naming. And with that, it brings us to the alternatives, which is option one, and it's ordinance 274. First consideration, again, the second consideration would be August 14th, and the third consideration would be August 28th. Be happy to answer your questions.
Any questions for Jared before we open the public hearing?
None.
We'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 274. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
With the consideration of alternative one, the Story County Board of Supervisors have approved ordinance number 274 as proposed for the first consideration today and scheduled the second one for August 14th, third one for August 28th.
Let's just schedule the second one to start with.
Fine.
Yep.
You want to
second that? So we've got a motion to approve on first reading 274 and set second reading for August 14th. Any further discussion?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Second reading is set for the 14th, and we'll talk about whether we're doing a third reading or not at that point.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Next is consideration of sending a budget amendment notice for publication. Lisa Markley.
Good morning again.
Good morning. I told you I'd be back.
Absolutely. Now that we've done all of it, we've got to actually send out notice.
No.
No, this is a brand new one.
Right. Oh, you're doing another one.
Doing another one.
All right, good.
Yeah, good. We heard that enthusiasm.
The inside baseball is that she doesn't like to do budgeting.
Right. Basically, just a couple of items that popped up. The Carroll Prairie and Jordan Wildlife purchases are scheduled to be happening soon.
And there's energy transfer funds involved that were not budgeted. They're still in the committed area, so we need to budget those. Along with the Justice Center roof, which is happening, and we've got half of the dollars put in for revenues. So I'm amending revenues by 1.1, expenditures by 1.3. In order to accommodate those items, I would like to have a public hearing for the amendment on August 28th.
And the intergovernmental revenues, that is the grant dollars that are associated with Jordan, is that right?
Correct, with Jordan and Carol.
Okay.
Yes.
Questions for Lisa about sending this to publication?
Very straightforward.
Right. My only question is the other half for Justice Center. When do we look at that?
Have you got 100% of the cost of the roof in here?
I've got 100% of the cost of the roof in here, and I've got 100% of the revenue for the roof in here. We've received $200,000.
Just received, but you're putting all $400,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Then make a motion.
I will move that we approve the budget amendment notice for publication with the hearing to be on August 28th.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Let's not have any more budget amendments for a little bit, huh?
Huh, from your lips.
Thank you, Mrs. Marshall.
Next is discussion consideration of quote from Geotech for a geothermal flush at the Human Services Center.
Good morning.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Good. So Story County was one of the first to embrace geothermal.
Yes.
But what it means is that our systems are getting to an age that we got some maintenance to do on.
Yep, and that's exactly what this is. We just met the life expectancy of the fluid in that well field.
Okay.
And how many years have we got on it?
Yeah, about a little over 20.
I think we're doing pretty good then.
Yeah. The building opened in 98, but the well field's been in use since about 97, so 20, 21 years.
Yeah, and so all I would ask in the future is that we make sure that this is part of our ongoing budget conversations.
What we ran into was this one, since it was our first go-round with it, we didn't really know a whole lot about geothermal, so there was...
Nobody did.
Yeah. So there were some hurdles about how we was actually going to go about draining it. So it just took longer to get the logistics of making it happen, and then we had a little bit of disposal conversation with the City of Ames to work out, so we just couldn't get a hard enough number during the regular budget, but I didn't want to put it off
until
next fiscal year. So.
We never had any problem with algae. You
know, not this one. It's just
funny how now here we do, and there we don't.
Yeah, this way. What happened here, you know, it's up to speculation, but I think it was contaminated from the get-go, and it just took a few years for us to discover the problem.
Okay.
We have nothing on that level at all with the HSC.
Super. Just time to do it.
Just time to do it.
And we're going to try to absorb this 15 in current budget dollars, and we'll see where we stand at the end of the year.
Yep.
Okay. Other questions for Jovi?
None.
All right. I'd take a motion.
I move consideration from Geotech Midwest, Inc. for geothermal flush at the Human Services Center for $15,005.
I second.
Motion and a second. Jovi, thanks.
Thank you, Joe.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
Leanne,
how long is this going to take?
Long enough for me to sit down and say two words.
Okay.
Cool.
Sentences. Good morning.
The proposed change to the facade grant program is to change fiscal year 18 to fiscal year 19.
Any questions for Leanne?
None.
If not, I take a motion.
I move that we approve the presented facade grant program for fiscal year 19 with the changes fiscal year July 1, 2018 to June 30, 2019.
Second.
Motion second. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Do the same thing on handbooks. Oh, you're not going to be able to, are you?
Sorry. We tried.
So as Matt's getting presentation ready, I'm going to just kick it off. What he's going to talk to you about is a project that's been on his work program for this summer. It's something that was developed a few years ago and really kind of was not used, so we wanted to update it so it could be used and the target audience is appointed boards and commission members.
So, with the original boards and commission handbook, I'm not sure how old it was when I first looked at it, but
5 or 6 years.
But we kind of, just to give you a summary of what it's all about, we have a little welcoming statement, just kind of informing everybody what Story County, what the boards and commissions are. Had to update the names of the supervisors to the current people. And then we just a little introduction as to what boards and commissions are, what's the purpose, what do they do. We updated on the side here to a picture of you guys. It wasn't you guys before. And then the current listing of boards and commissions. We created a new kind of hierarchy structure to show the flow of government in Story County and who's under who, what's where, that kind of thing. Eligibility requirements, application process, fairly straightforward, didn't change too much. Created a new chart to show which boards and commissions have what power and what they can do. Iowa open meeting laws, that didn't change too much. And just some information on holding productive meetings, try and keep things flowing. Updated the new notification thing for the new website, and then just some contact information and a concluding statement.
So this is intended to go to all existing board commission members, and then as they're appointed, new ones appointed, there would be a copy of this as well.
Questions?
Good holiday. Okay, good. It looks good. Just a couple of comments and notes here. All right. You have boosted the conference board and the 911 service board. And I'm going to look out to Deb Shildroth out there. Okay. I don't recall that this particular board has appointed any members of the public to those three. Are we supposed to be appointing members of the public to the Boost Board, the conference boards, or the E911 service board?
Good morning.
Good morning, Ed.
This was something that Leanne and I had talked about as we were looking through this list. On the Boost Board specifically, that's usually an internal appointment, either coming from the Board of Supervisors or another staff person. So it is a board appointment, but we can modify this to reflect that. The same with Compensation Board. That's typically the board finds those appointments, and we just run them through our regular process at the beginning of each year before that compensation.
Okay, I didn't question compensation.
Oh, I'm sorry, which one?
No, I'm questioning the conference board. I took that to the assessor's boards, the mini and the Story County assessor's conference board. And I didn't know that we appointed anybody from that.
So maybe I'm just a little confused here. Are you suggesting that it wouldn't be appropriate for us to have a handbook for boards and commissions that residents of Story County are serving on behalf of Story County, whether we appoint or not? So Conference Board is a great example. Yeah, that's made up of us and the mayors and people from the school.
Correct.
But I still think it's appropriate for us to have a handbook for them to use or not use, just to help as they come on board.
Okay. Well, and if we're approaching it that way, maybe we should make a notation for Boost, because other than the supervisor or a staff member, correct, we don't appoint the Boost Board itself, all right? And they don't have any, they set policy and decision authority, but not for us, correct?
Well, a lot of our boards do exactly that. Whether we appoint or not, And so I just ask you this question about Booth. If somebody contacted us here at Story County and said, hey, I'm really interested in serving on the Booth board, and we forwarded that on
to Mary, to Booth
directly.
But wouldn't we have that type of relationship then with DCAT also and some other ones? That's why I'm questioning that if we include all of those, we could do that. I'm not fighting one way or the other. I'm just pointing out we have inconsistency here about who we appoint and who respond to us for either decision-making authority, or we appoint them and they have independent with capacity. So either we want to add some more people or we want to go ahead and take them out. Your call. Okay.
Yeah, so I like the idea of consistency. You and I just read this from two different perspectives.
Yes.
And so I'd say internally, let's just decide who we want this to be available to, and then let's listen. And if we want it to only be available to those that the Board of Supervisors appoint, great. And if we want to do it for everybody, then let's get a good comprehensive list.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes. I'm going to page 9 about the holding productive meetings. Okay? And your 1, 2, 3, 4th bullet point. There's a typo in it with the word "may" says maybe. The board and commission may be established, so you want to get rid of the "may." But I'd like to change the wording of the last sentence you got there, where it's talking about generally 15 minutes is usually enough time for the main presentation by an outside group, and 3 minutes have become a standard time for members of public. I'm somewhat uncomfortable saying just the 3 minutes, because each board and commission gets to decide. If you expanded it to say, and 3 to 5 minutes is the usual time, but they can set as much time or as little time as they all want. I know you're trying to give them guidance, but I'm uncomfortable with that.
Gotcha.
So I'd like to change that wording. The rest of them are, there's some other typos I can just send to you.
Okay.
I'll just send you my PowerPoint. That's what you get when you get an next editor looking over, okay? That's it.
All right, so 3 to 5 minutes has become, I still think that's okay. It's become a standard time.
And I'll go with that for the 3 to 5. As long as we get it's more guidance with a little flexibility.
All right. Yep. And you're going to send some other editorial notes to them.
Correct.
So then I would suggest that we approve this on first reading, but note that there will be some amendments and you can come back to us on consent. With those edits. Does that work?
That's true. I will make that motion.
Okay. Marty?
I'm not displeased with the language I see. I guess I'm better served.
Seconded.
Oh, we got a second. I guess you're looking for an opinion. Just following along. Yes, you have a second.
Okay, motion and a second. Anything further for us?
I gotcha.
Okay, so if we approve this, there will be some edits. It will come back to us on consent.
Okay.
Olson.
Aye.
Key.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Good job.
Thank you.
Next item is discussing consideration of Resolution 1905, Dayton Ridge Final Plat.
Back, Gary.
Gary, this one should be pretty straightforward, too, huh?
Straightforward. Slice it out.
Are you going to be that quick?
So we've been dealing with Dayton Ridge right there on the north end of Dayton Parkway, property owned by the Gibbons. And looks like we're ready to do the final plat.
Yes. And Jeff and Mary Gibbons are here today. If you have any questions about them, address 2272 Dayton Parkway, Ames. We're in section 24. It's a 10.91 acre area. Property has been rezoned with a preliminary plat submitted back in September to R1 Transitional Residential District. Current land use, again, in that 10 acres, Gibbons dwelling, as well as a few accessory structures are on the north and west side of the dwelling. The grade increases in the south portion of the property, heavily treed. Location, again, the yellow star is where we're at. Northeast of City of Ames, 1.9 miles. It's over 3 miles southeast of the city of Dilbert. This is a
close-up 2017 aerial view, the existing dwelling, and again, the accessory structures to the north of the property. As a part of the subdivision plat, the existing access off of Dayton Parkway, which leads from that private easement to the dwelling, will be removed with this subdivision. Again, what's proposed is four separate lots. The applicant's parcel, which is a little over 6 acres, 6.7 acres, the other three proposed lots, which are to the east of the applicant's lot, are over an acre in size. Again, this is part of Dayton Park. We explained the history of that when we went through the preliminary plat. It was opened by A.L. Dayton of Nevada in 1916. There was an existing swimming pool south of the applicant's dwelling, which has been removed, and he used that material for the dam checks south of the house. So it's kind of nice that that material is still on the site. So again, we're looking at four separate lots, ranging in size from 6.7 to a little over an acre. R1 Transitional Residential District has a 25,000 square foot lot size. All lots will take access to the privately constructed street, which will be privately owned and maintained and dedicated for public use. The minor differences from the preliminary plat to the final are the common lot line between lots 2 and 3 was adjusted to the east to allow a little more space for a future septic system on lot 3. And then the north side of the hammerhead was extended to allow the applicant to take direct access off that the end of that hammerhead. Mm-hmm. So this plat reflects that. So this is the drawing. Again, about a 10.9 acre area. We've got the applicant's lot 4 contains the existing dwelling residences. The driveway access off of that private driveway goes away with this request. And then you've got the three proposed new lots, which again are a little over an acre, all taking access off of this new street. Darren Moon, county engineer, and I did a site review and just noted a few things. The road was constructed, the drainage pipes were in, there was some erosion control. We asked to add a few more, particularly west of where the check dam materials were put in, which applicant has been very responsive to all the comments that we've had. And then Darren commented that there was some discussion about possibly paving this in the future. It's not required, though. It is a gravel road. If it is paved, that there be more of a center, an elevation crown be applied so that it drains better and doesn't have ice build up. So we did route this interagency review August 1. Applicant provided the comment, the information from the Gilbert Fire Chief, the utility service providers, water, electric, gas, acknowledging the project, acknowledging being able to provide the service. We asked for some minor adjustments, spoke about on the plat, which were taken care of. Environmental Health is supportive of allowing future builder property owners to submit information from an engineer or a soils representative with regard to soil characteristics for proposed septic systems. The department, Environmental Health Department, worked out a binding agreement that they're having the applicant sign. There were some questions about the legal description, which it was determined that the information that was provided was acceptable. The assessor's department provided comments about how the property will be taxed in the future. We did send notices to property owners within a quarter mile, July 1 of this year. Also had communication with the city of Ames since they're within 2 miles, and they communicated back that they will not be providing any formal response via resolution because it's in the Ames River Fringe. rural residential, which puts that solely in the county's purview for review. So here's a few site photos. This is the new street. Looking to the east, we're on the top of that hammerhead. This is the south end of the hammerhead, looking south. You can kind of see remnant of where the swimming pool was. Again, it's pretty awesome that he reused that material on the check dam. Uh-huh. Looking north towards the north end of the hammerhead, previous driveway again. We asked that to be seeded, and he was in the process of doing that. This photo shows that, so that will not be removed. Hammerhead was extended. He's trying to save some trees that are located on the east side of his house, so he can take direct access now through that right away. There's the old swimming pool area, and he's helped out the future builder by kind of creating a little area there that could be used for a foundation. This is the check dam area. Again, this is the material that was removed from the swimming pool.
A lot of work there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a worker.
And then erosion control. And this is just on the south side of the right-of-way. And again, all the information that was requested on the major plat was submitted. All the proposed improvements have been installed with the exception of water, gas, electric, which the applicant will be extending private service lines to each of the lot at their expense. We have something from him with regard to that.
Yep.
And then the existing private drive went away. We asked for erosion control materials. They were installed. Which brings us to alternative one. Story County Board of Supervisors approves resolution 19-5, the proposed major final subdivision plat of Dayton Ridge, plat 1, as put forth in subdivision 10-17.
So this one should be a fairly easy one, right? This is with a few noted minor changes. This is just update of the preliminary plat that we've already approved. As you rightly note, this is an applicant that's going above and beyond to do everything the right way and everything we're asking.
He's very responsive.
Any questions for Jerry?
No.
This is pretty painfully straightforward. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when you had John Ann Wakefield's farm to the east of it and Hickory Grove Trailer Court to the north. I would have to say Jeff and Mary have been very forthcoming. It was nice to hear the history involved in the area. As you drive past it, you didn't know it was there. They've done a good job of garnering out all that information. I'm sure they'd share it with anybody. And I think it's just a natural progression of what's there. I suspect they're going to have new neighbors here shortly coming up. Uh-huh. And I would move, if it were at
that building,
for approval of resolution 1905 as presented for the proposed major final subdivision of plat of Dayton Ridge, plat 1, as put forth in case SUB 10-17.
I'll second.
Motion and second. I would just say that I love that we've got some development going on in a way that's still a tip of the hat to our history. I think it's really, really cool, and appreciate Jeff and Mary doing this and doing it the right way. Anything further?
No.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1905 passes. Final plat is done.
Thank you.
Nice. Good job, Gary. Next is discussion consideration to assist with meal costs associated with the summer enrichment program offered at Collins Maxwell Schools, as we've done in the past, but this looks like less dollars, Gene.
Yeah.
I love that.
Morning, Gene.
Morning, Gene. Hey. Yeah. Well, thank you. Gene Cressy, United by Story County. This is our second year that we've had a summer enrichment program in Collins. Collins Maxwell School District is our partner. YSS is a partner. Story County Extension is a partner. I could go on partners. Last year we did a pilot. We had 87 kids enrolled, not all 87 continued. This summer and last summer it was 4 weeks. So if you recall, we had 4 weeks in June, and what we agreed to do with the Collins Maxwell School District was to reimburse what the state would reimburse for those summer food service program children. For a summer food service program to be 100% reimbursed, it has to be 50% of the students enrolled have to be free reduced. It's unfortunate, this is my political statement, it's unfortunate that Congress hasn't figured out that some of the country is rural, and that is not very
cost-effective for us. So one thing what we don't want to have happen is for Collins Maxwell School District to lose money on the meal program. This summer it was extended to 6 weeks. Children that come are provided transportation from Maxwell High School to Collins Elementary, which is in Collins, and they are fed breakfast and lunch. So this covers both meals. Last year, United Way asked the County Board of Supervisors to go halfsies with us. That's a technical term. And you all said yes. And so the reason why it's less is because we said to Collins Maxwell, we will reimburse, but only for the actual cost, and not for what you would be reimbursed from the Iowa Department of Education.
Which I think is reasonable. It means they've got skin in the game as well. I mean,
absolutely.
And so I think it's a reasonable solution you come to.
Yep. So one way or another, we will find the money to do this, and I think it would be easier if we do the United Way would put in a half, if the Board of Supervisors would put in a half.
And United Way is already good with putting in a half?
Absolutely.
All right. Board questions or a motion?
I would move. Oh, no questions. Okay.
I have a speech, but then again, I'm always happy to see the push out because these kids are so well academically served. But
it's
in a school setting, it's nice to see societies moving away from the inhibitions that they have about, they have the problems they have with summer school, because then when you say it's summer school, you get pushback from parents and students. These are the kids that are best served by putting them into a school setting, enriching them, feeding them, structuring them, and then turning them back, and then in a short time, returning them into the school year. Good job, and I would welcome your motion.
I move that we approve reimbursing the Collins Maxwell Summer Enrichment Program for meal costs in the amount of $1,141.80.
Second.
Motion and a second. I would just note this. The reality is these kind of programs do not happen without the personal, passionate advocacy that Gene, you bring forward. So thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Gene.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Pass.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So now we are to departmental reports, Environmental Health Quarterly Report. Margaret, I'm leaving because I've got a meeting to go to, but you're doing a phenomenal job.
Okay.
Thank you. Marty, it's all yours.
And
Margaret,
we'll have to hear about it when you come. Okay.
Well, Margaret, this is the first of two presentations. You will be speaking to the Board of Health here in the same room at 2:00. So.
You can take a little snooze at right now.
No, I like your presentations. You kind of get to it.
Thank you. Let's see.
Good meeting.
Yeah. Very fun.
Nope. That's not mine, is it? Nope. Sorry.
Nope, we're still reading that road again.
Sorry.
Hey, I have to drive through and down through that area.
Close that one out. Oh, golly, you named it the same as I did. There it is. I apologize. Okay, so good morning.
Good morning.
I'll start off talking about wells. We've done, this is for the calendar year, 8 well permits, 6 of which were water. Surprising, that balance is changing. 12 wells have been plugged, 1 cistern, 0 rehabs, 112 water samples, and that's really hitting our lab budget because we're doing a lot of arsenic testing that is covered by the grant program, though. And time of transfer inspections, there's 20. We spent our full amount of our grant money for the fiscal year, and this year we'll get the same amount, $30,600, and that should be on the consent agenda for next week. We haven't gotten the paperwork to sign yet. This well here, just incidentally, this has always been one of my favorite windmills in Story County. It's on on 70 there, just north of the ASQ bridge. And I always thought it was high and dry, and it's not. We had, a severe rain event, and sure enough, I don't know if you can see it here, but there's water on both sides of that well. And it's a farm field, so we're picking up the nitrates and the pesticides and this and that. So that well, unfortunately, has to be plugged. They could maybe leave the windmill, but it has to be plugged. I noticed that it's in the county right-of-way, so I reached out to Darren just this morning to see if the county takes care of that or the property owner, because it's definitely in the road right-of-way.
What did he say?
Say what?
What did he say?
He hasn't responded yet.
Okay.
I've got a frog in my throat today. For septics, we're behind. This year we're not as busy as usual. Let's see. So we have done 32 inspections, 59 permits completed, and repairs that line. There's a lot more repairs. That our software doesn't calculate that right. So
probably 15 to 20.
A teaching moment. That is a distribution box back in the 70s. They put in concrete ones, and they all corrode. Mm-hmm. And so now they put the plastic ones in with the levelers. So you can get even distribution to all the different lines just because of this little box. And it makes, you know, if it's a little uneven, it's beautiful. It's really a nice invention. Let's see, what else? Pool, tattoo, and tanning. So far this year, one pool was closed because of the high chlorine. And incidentally, that happens to be where I took my certified pool operator training, is at that place where they had to close it down. So that was interesting. Three pools were positive for bacteria. Every month, they have to collect a sample and send it into to a certified lab, test for bacteria. And if it's positive, then they have to shock chlorinate. They test again. No, test twice and then shock chlorinate if it's twice. And we've had three so far this year, and we've never had it before. And then maybe about 5 years ago, it was all crypto. Cryptosporidium, which is a lot tougher to take care of. But it's like these things come in waves in the pools. I don't get it. It's really an odd phenomenon. But so three this year on the bacteria.
Margaret, once you close a pool, how long is it before it can be reopened? Once, like, say, the chlorine level goes down or once the bacteria is gone?
Yeah. That's a good question. It depends on, like, if it's Giardia, Cryptosporidium, bacteria. There's different chlorine levels versus time. So it all depends on how high they take it up, if they've got UV treatment. But if you have an incident, like a big roof in the pool kind of thing, there's different requirements for that. So it really depends on that. Chlorine, sometimes you can get that fixed pretty quickly and then reopen it right away. Yeah, so it's just a whole mixed bag of opportunity to be different. Let's see, tanning. Kathy mentioned that a lot of the new apartments that are coming in Ames are offering tanning bed opportunities, so she's trying to work with Ames a little more to get that information from them, because the state's not, you know, aware of some of them also. So we have to try to keep on top of those so that they can be inspected.
So as you become aware of these places, then you in turn put them on your inspection?
Yes, uh-huh, and report to the state as well so that they have to get their permits and that.
So what were you asking the city of Ames to do?
Just if it comes in on their sheets, on the written plans and that, just like if it goes through the planning department, let us know that they are planning on having a tanning bed.
Pretty straightforward.
Yes, yeah, really is.
Thank
but,
you.
Let's see. So what else did I want to mention? Tattoos, yep. And Matt did a real good job this year inspecting those outdoor pools. It's always tricky getting all those inspected right away so that if there's any safety concerns, they can be addressed immediately, you know, because they're only open a few months. So he did great getting on top of that fast. Special projects, Squaw Valley South, they did decide to go with the group treatment plant and not the on-site. So they published their anti-degradation for the Squaw Creek, and they're going forward with that.
And then how is that handled? Is it owned by the Homeowners Association?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see. Fernald, I've got some pictures in the next few slides here. We're asking Fernald folks, the few that are having some issues with property maintenance, property safety, to come in and talk to the Board of Health and have them in on the decision on what needs to be done and just kind of bring it to the table to talk about. Crestview is on the agenda for the Board of Health. Cameron Estates, I've got pictures, Iron Bridge pictures. I'm working on two failing mounds that just won't go away. I issued a notice of violation to an installer for not calling us to get a final inspection before it was covered. And then working on code revisions little by little with the Board of Health. I made the mistake of bringing too much to discuss, and so now I'm doing them little by little so that there's time for more discussion and more time to think about things.
Revisions to the Board of Health, the code.
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, the code. So here we are in Fernald. There's basically three properties right along Richland Street there on the south side. This is pictures of the back off property. And it burned several years ago, and this is still the state that it's in. You can see that, you know, they did a good job of bringing it in and piling it up, and he worked on it again, and it looks better, but it's still not where it needs to be. I did not issue a notice of violation because he is working on it and recently working on it, but I want the Board of Health to give their opinion on whether or not this which should be considered public hazard, public nuisance, whatever, and what he should do because of it.
Are any of the neighbors speaking to that?
No.
Yeah.
Well, on the phone a little bit. So this is the Prather residence, and this started off as a complaint on sewage going to the property to the east, the one that we just looked at. And the way he remediated that violation was to move everybody out. And now that house is slowly starting to fall apart because nobody's living in it.
Oh.
So he has contacted Ray Reynolds to talk about controlled burn, a practice burn. And so the asbestos folks are coming in to see if there's any asbestos in the roof. And depending on that answer, they're going to go forward and burn this probably this summer sometime.
Okay.
And hopefully, and then he plans to build or bring a modular in on this spot. So that'll be a really nice improvement to that neighborhood. Let's see. And then the third one, you might notice there's a lot of cars here. This is a two-bedroom house. We received a complaint on this one regarding no septic system.
Okay.
And so I haven't issued the notice of violation yet. I'm still working on getting that letter to the woman that owns it. She's been a hard one to find. I think she's out of state. But so anyway, I asked Matt to see if he could go there, and then as it turned out, the two deputies went instead. And just to serve that letter. So I'm not sure how I'm going to do a site review if it's a dangerous situation. I don't know how that's going to work out, but so we'll see. So stay tuned on that. But anyway, it looks like there's a lot of people living in this small two-bedroom house. So that in itself might be a violation for the fire folks. Cameron, safe.
Before we move on, Laura, so here's just a note. We waived taxes on this property this past winter.
We did?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out.
Yes, so there's that component of the story, too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This year they didn't apply for that waiver, though.
No, they didn't?
They did not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We had acted on it within the last year.
Does the Board of Health have any ability, given the situation that may exist there? I mean, no septic, we know. Okay. So you issued a notice of violation. It may be a fire issue also.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly could the Board of Health come in and try to get people out of there with those truly life impacting.
That's a hard question to answer. As far as occupancy, you know, there's no building code. I don't think we can really, I've never enforced an occupancy thing. Okay. I can insist on, well, I see that many cars, as many people insist on a bigger septic system. That's about all I think we can do. What do you think, Marty?
Well, we have a garage, and you see it in the upper right-hand side, that quite possibly has turned into a second living site on this property. And by the cars parked there and the traffic it generates, clearly you have got people living there in a state and in a capacity that is oversized on the septic system. And it...
So there was one, but it crashed, basically.
I don't have any record, so there was something.
We have a modest amount of coding to enforce.
Okay.
We can give direction to Margaret in regards to, but Matt, in going and talking to him last week, that when he went to serve the paper to determine the owner, between the calling, which turned into a lot of dead ends, to actually finding somebody to take receipt, not knowing if the owner may or be in Florida, maybe in Cedar Falls, or maybe in the house, could not definitively say one another, and this person was in the backyard. Unfortunately, he had two road deputies that served the paper.
Okay.
So I would not be inclined to put Margaret or her department in any.
Apparently, the deputies have gotten several calls there before, and that's why they suggested that maybe we shouldn't be going there by ourselves.
But if you didn't notice, all these things that she just showed you were properties right next to one another.
I did.
Yeah, they just run in a line.
Yeah.
And then my other question is back to my, we waive taxes, and why did we waive taxes? I mean, was...
Well, it's an application process that she, I think, is just on an income basis, on
a hardship
basis. And we do this like to 9 people.
Right.
I think that's
right.
It's not very many, but she made application, hit the criteria, we did it, and then it turns into this story.
Got it. Okay,
and
thank you.
Yeah, and then also the treasurer's office explained to me that if you're getting this waiver for the tax, you cannot be collecting rent on that same property. And this has been going on for a while, so I'm just, you know, so maybe that's why she decided not to apply for tax relief this time around.
Thanks for bringing up today.
It's quite a layered story, and then we will visit on it again as a Board of Health this afternoon, so I think there will be more to the story later.
Okay, thank you.
So, erosion control, Cameron Estates. Went out there on some other business, saw a bunch of erosion, and so I thought I'd cut to the chase, called DNR, and reported it to them, and got Fox Engineering a little excited about that whole thing. But as it turned out, DNR issued a notice of violation for erosion control. So, and they got their attention. They went out and did a lot of remediation.
It was interesting. I was at the Kelly Pig Roast, the fire department's first annual fundraiser, Pig Roast, on Saturday. And I sat down, across from a couple, started talking, and turns out that the wife owns property right there north of Cameron Estates. And
also
is paying very close attention to the entire erosion situation. As she pointed out, she played in squad creek when she was young, etc. But also just this whole situation. So here you've got an absentee landowner, if you will, although she's still in the county, who is watching which is happening at Cameron Estates and very concerned about the erosion. So thank you for being diligent about that. It's not just a few of us, you know, on the government who are paying attention.
Yeah, and you know, once that soil is off the ground and in the water, there's no turning back. You know, it's going to be down the gulf eventually, so got to catch it. Same deal, Iron Bridge subdivision, erosion. This was really incredibly bad. You know, I'll say that, yes, it happened after that big rainstorm, but But that's why you have erosion control for the events. You know, you have to figure it out. That's their job. This huge hole, top right, it was unreal. And that soil is gone somewhere, right? So it's down. Ballard Creek down. It's gone, you know. And so, and you'll see they left a top off the septic tank and it filled with muddy water. Very dangerous to have that kind of a situation with kids in the neighborhood. One lot over, there were kids playing, you know, so I got their attention on that. Just very, very, very bad erosion control and disrespect for that whole area. And this was that sensitive area. They tried to have Story County give them a subdivision, and they didn't. So now it's in the city of Huxley. I keep city of Huxley apprised of what's going on.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So anyway, called DNR field office. They went out and issued a notice of violation, and bam, right away they got their little, you know, snakes up in this net.
So, were they aware? Were the developers aware that it looked like this, that this had occurred? The erosion.
Half owner of the Bella home, that's his house right there, Mark Dion.
Oh, in the back, the erosion in the back.
Okay. They probably know. They're out there today. Yeah. So
okay.
You talked about the city of Huxley in regards to the making of them.
Right.
As it's now in the city of Huxley, I remember the conversation that we had here when this property was looking towards being in the county into development, and then
right.
It didn't. Did the city of Huxley, did you kind of share with the city of Huxley what you were doing?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Friends, you, Jerry, Moore, and I went out twice in July at the very beginning, very end, and 15 trails are gone. I'm starting to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is there. I'm doing it. It's so cool. You know, these pictures, you know, it's kind of hard to get grip on what's going on, but I think there's a hole where they were.
Okay.
There they went. I don't know, but. Yeah. The only mound, Matt and I went and worked on this one. That's like a river of stuff going into a little waterway. So we've been sending them off lab samples, trying to figure out what's going on with the tank.
Where is this?
Yeah.
This is yes. On Stagecoach Road, almost up to Riverside. It's
okay.
A little subdivision of three houses by acre.
Okay.
Yeah.
You haven't issued any notice of violation or anything yet because you aren't quite clear what's wrong. Is that, or was that
oh, they're working on it, and there's a little one-hour story, which I'll share everyone from, but they are cooperating.
Okay.
And they are working on it. There's just some problems with the county permitting work, the final inspection, those kinds of things.
Okay.
But they are working on it. Yeah.
So you're saying this is moving to resolution?
It is. If people are working on a problem, I do not just notice the violation.
Right.
I feel like I get better response when they don't feel like they're being turned in.
Sure. No, I understand.
That's my approach. Motor
okay.
Man, that's my approach.
Okay, good.
Let's see. What is inspectable reviews for physical, rolling, acres, dog breeding, subdivision, and then I need to revisit the Red Prairie Hills and breakfast because they are just kind of renting that right now. And when we're talking about the whole project, they were, it was going to be a DNR type wastewater approval. But now that they're just doing the breakfast, they're just using that existing septic system, so I need to go back and work with them on finding and see if they're going to blow out their system. Because, you know, bed and breakfast is a lot more used than
right. They have they dropped permanently then? Are they saying they've dropped permanently doing any kind of event center or adding?
I can't see. All right. I think it's in the courts. Okay. So that'll be a while. And then one comment on FINCO. I know that was kind of a big issue. several listings came out of it. One of those being, he's not burning his branches and stuff as much anymore, because I think it was brought to light that legally he cannot be burning stuff there unless it's from that very property that he cut it from. So that's another goal in mind. Training meetings, I'm still on the Iowa board, meets monthly, and that board is reviewing the test to certify certificate in college, so that's been a lot of work lately. Participating in Stark County Chair Rule, field certifications, health lifestyle, Kathy sent to the Bidbook webinar, and then that.
Thank you.
Questions?
No. Appreciate what you do. You have a very small staff. You get a lot done. You cover the county. So thank you for. You have very interesting stories to tell. All right. Well, that brings us to our public forum number two. If anybody is so inclined at this point, we only have, a couple members of the public. And if anybody would like to speak to us about anything that they care to, now would be that time.
Can I speak as a public person?
I think you are more than entitled, Margaret.
Margaret James. My question is, I was walking down the street of Avia. Why aren't we doing a blood drive for the county hospital as opposed to Red Cross, because they're both having blood drives, and I thought, maybe I would rather give my blood to the county.
I would turn to Leanne at that point, who's done. If you care to speak to that, because I think you have done yeoman's work in getting the blood drives organized and participated in.
And so we've just maintained that partnership with Red Cross. I think they actually come in, they organize it all, they're doing all that stuff with marketing, they do the external marketing, they set it up, we're the legs and arms of the company. And actually, I can do some research, who is hosting the one?
Well, the flyers, I thought I could go down and
think. Well, I can. Is that the new hospital? I can find out, because we do have LiveServe that comes in and does it with the school. That's who the school usually partners with. Red Cross and LiveServe are the two names in the outfit business that it is, for the blood donation world. We've talked about actually looking at expanding our partners in the next coming years, but if you can find out who it is, or else I can find out who it is.
Glad to find out.
That's worthy concern. We do have somebody in our community that has a need, I'm sure. Whether they, I would encourage somebody to talk to the hospital itself.
Yeah.
That's an explanation. If you're,
if
they get credit, maybe if there's a central bank for Central Iowa, a blood bank, if maybe Story Medical would get credit for those number of units as opposed to LiveServe. Yeah, okay, so Leanne has another special project. Research the blood collection industry. Okay.
That's great. Thank you. Good question, Margaret. Leanne, I look forward to hearing what you come back with that. Anybody else? Okay, just letting you got up. Okay, at that point, ladies, on assignments, committee meetings, and announcements. Loris.
Okay, Let's see. I think I want to make sure that that all the staff know, and also any public who'd like to weigh in, to a staff member or one of the supervisors, that next Monday afternoon, that's the 13th, that we are going to be having a discussion on legislative priorities. Someone from the chamber has requested, Ames Chamber has requested that we have this discussion. They do every year. Last year we had it after our elected officials and department head meeting, and this year they're asking to come in a little earlier. So that's August 13th, it's next Monday. So any of the staff who are listening, or as I said, members of the public who want to, you know, give feedback or whatever for us on our legislative priorities, please make sure that you know that and try to get information to us. Another kind of somewhat internal is the safety committee is meeting tomorrow. And on the agenda, one of the items happens to be the routine and non-routine tasks as we're trying to pull together some information. So I turn to my fellow board member and then the one who's gone.
Oh.
Okay. So if you can, the request is we compile a short list of what our routine and our non-routine tasks are. So if you shoot them my way, I'll create a couple of items too, and I'll bring them to the safety committee tomorrow. How's that? I know it's a variety. I'm driving. We think of like we drive. That puts us at risk. I'm looking at Todd out there, right?
Yeah, it's high risk tasks. It's not what you do on a daily basis. It's
high risk.
You do that has the potential for bodily injury or life threatening.
We can't hear you.
He's saying it's what is the potential for high risk or bodily injury or puts us at a higher risk. So okay. So see, it should be a short list.
All right.
Hey, I'm good. I'll pass it on to you.
As I alluded to earlier this morning, had spent the morning with Keith Morgan, our emergency management coordinator in Marshalltown, talking to a Marshalltown supervisor about the story that's unfolding in their community in regards to what they are incurring and the problems and successes that they're having. And I'm doing it in behalf of the fact that we were in the middle of a COOP-COG exercise. We'd like to see if there's any lessons learned or anything that we can bring back to us on a takeaway basis to implement into our planning. The long and the short of it, Marshall County, it does not have a COOP-COG plan, and they, when we begin to bring it up in discussion, they would like to look at what we have, discuss about us being of help to them in formulating planning for future planning for these events. You never think that they're going to happen to you. You hope they're never going to happen to you, but when you have a neighbor that's going through them, you have the ability to both be helpful on a going forward basis and possibly learn from their hardships, and I think that we have this ability to do it. So I've engaged in that process. We will be talking to them at the end of this month in regards to where they have gone from what we got yesterday. And I think I have talked to Deb and Alyssa, and I've made mention to Leanne, who's been the steward of our COOP-COG document, that possibly she might be somebody that would sit down with their emergency management coordinator and help them grow something that would serve them on a going forward basis. There's much that they don't have that we take for granted, and right now we have the luxury of already having something pretty robust, and we are adding to it or changing it to reflect more of what we find. So once again, we have a neighbor to the east of here that is going through. You happen to drive through the community, and I encourage anybody with freedom of movement and time to go over there and see what really an F3 tornado can do to a community. They have devastation in ways that just you don't have words for.
Right, and just a reminder, if somebody's listening who doesn't know what the COOP-COG is or so, but that's our continuation of operations plan. And so they got hit. That doesn't do anything to address mitigation planning, but it says, hey, how are you going to keep government running after you get hit? And their courthouse got hit, so they had immediate needs to move government operations.
So much of the damage was in the city confines of Marshalltown, so the county itself is kind of the secondary role that we're providing for its satellite operations and the courthouse itself, which were badly, badly damaged. So, and it was an interesting takeaway to talk to them about where they are with their insurance. They don't have us step in with our insurance provider, too. So,
Thanks.
We are fortunate that did not befall us, but not by much. So I have nothing else, and I would entertain any motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.